Hello, everyone, and welcome to episode 112 of D&D Discussions, the podcast for players and DMs alike, where we cover a wide variety of topics to help you with your games. I'm your host, Ryan Reeder, and with me is my awakened otter buddy, Ben Bumhoffer.
Well, hey there. How's it going, Ryan? It is a wonderful, wonderful long weekend, which is why we're a tiny bit late, but we are jumping at the chance to record here and have some fun.
Yes, we've got a lot of really fun stuff to talk about. Some slightly unexpected as well. Pleasantly surprised. So let's, before we hit our main topic, let's jump into a little bit of news. The first being the pleasant unexpected surprise. Both the new MCDM Flea Mortals and Where Evil Lives monster books are now on D&D Beyond. What?
Yeah. Yeah, it's kind of crazy.
I was shocked.
I mean, like, if I remember correctly, when third parties started, and even before third parties were actually starting to appear on D&D Beyond, MCDM was the big thing that you were looking forward to. You know, you've put a lot of money into a lot of their content over the years. So having that available in this format is, like, just perfect for you because you can actually start folding in a lot of the stuff that you already have into your sessions.
I've said it before, and they're not sponsoring this or anything. This is just my extreme praise for a very good product, but they are, in my opinion, the best made monster book out of anything, period. That includes other third parties and first party. Like, this is an extremely well-made monster book. They are fun to run. They are fun to play against. They are done really well. There's a nice wide variety. The actual Flea Mortals monster book, 293 monsters.
Oof.
That's a lot. And as with all the stuff they've been doing lately, all the maps are also going into the D&D Beyond maps as well. And then it wasn't just Flea Mortals. They actually also added Where Evil Lives, which as of the recording of this episode, by the time you hear it, it will likely have just released.
Yep. The countdown is at 9 hours, 41 minutes and 49 seconds.
So Where Evil Lives is basically taking a lot of the stuff from Flea Mortals, the monsters from Flea Mortals, and giving you like level 1 to level 20 fully built like boss encounters for them. It has like 26 maps, level 2 through 20, like boss encounters, 145 monsters, many of which are in Flea Mortals, 24 magic items. Like, this is, if you want like ready-made encounters, a cool one-shot, etc., that you can kind of drop in, that's what this book is for.
That's pretty great. I know that it and Flea Mortals, they are definitely going to be joining my collection on my next, I have a little bit of extra money paycheck, because just having access to that amount of content, especially stuff that you can really kind of, you know, pull in and drop into any adventure is, you know, it's gold whenever you're doing any sort of homebrew content. So being able to do that is really exciting. And on top of that, too, just having a bunch of different monsters, new monsters that do crazy things and, you know, new abilities and stuff that if you've just been sticking with just Wizards of the Coast and, you know, D&D proper, there's going to be a lot of new content for you to explore and have a lot of fun with.
Yeah, and I believe there's actually a little discount going right now, too, if you order both of them together. So keep that in mind if that's something you want to do. But beyond that, one of the things I wanted to highlight was usually when they drop new third-party content, they do articles and such about it. And one I thought was really good that is kind of workable in a lot of ways, even for non-Flea Mortals monsters, is something called creature roles. And these are things that specifically Flea Mortals does. And apparently this was a thing in like fourth edition, And what it is each monster also has a specific type of role, like ambusher or controller or brute or leader, you know, skirmisher, all those type of things. And there's a little description of all the types of roles at the beginning of Fleet Mortals. And these are things that you can then use to build your encounter. Like I have a leader creature with a few skirmisher creatures and a brute creature. And based on their classification, they are meant to do certain things, support, be the tank, be the one with the what they use instead of legendary actions. They have something called villain actions, which take place on different rounds. And it's like a big thing that happens in the encounter that can change it up rather than just like here's an extra attack from a legendary action type thing. So it really, really neat type thing. And like I said, if you played fourth edition, you will probably be very aware of what that type of format is. But one of the other things, and I think we've talked about this a little bit, they have a very cool system they designed for running what are called minions.
Yes.
And minions are basically... They allow you to put a lot of a single type of creature or a lot of a few different types of creature into an encounter without making it overwhelming and without making it a huge chore to run. So basically a minion would be like if you had a lich, right? You have the one lich, but then you could have like 20 skeleton minions. And it sounds like a lot. But the way they actually have it set up is they're very easy to run because they attack in groups. So you only would actually need to attack with like four groups of these five or four groups of five for the skeletons, right?
Yeah.
Also die in one hit. Anything that is a direct attack that hits against a minion that you rolled an attack for, if you hit it, they die. So that it's a great system to show like here's some fodder basically that's you've got to get through, you got to wade through, or it can show a, you know, like you could easily use this for like a war zone, or you could easily use this for high level characters. Like you want your level 20 characters to be felling fire giants in a single blow. There's fire giant minions that you can use for that type of thing. So the way they have the system set up, it's super cool. It's I think maybe like two or three pages in the book for how to run minions. It's very easy. It's something you can explain to your players, and it's a really cool concept. So give that check that out. If nothing else, just because that can add a huge amount to your combat encounters and really spice them up and potentially even scare the ever living crap out of them the first time they encounter 20 of something rushing at them.
Exactly. And this is a system that I think we might have talked about a little bit before, but if not, I know that you kind of introduced me to it, and it seems like it's going to be something that I know I'm going to be using this in the future. I'm not going to say when, because sometimes my players listen to the show, but minions are definitely, you know, going to be incorporated because it is such a fun, different mechanic. And it really shows how your players have, or the characters have progressed and grown to be able to just kind of fell these creatures in one swoop and just, you know, take them out and just continue running towards their main goal and stuff. You know, it adds that really cool level of, you know, being powerful. And you've got Bonnie Tyler's Need a Hero playing in the background as they're running across the battlefield. I mean, it's definitely set for one of those types of moments.
Yeah. Very, very cool stuff. So if you use D&D Beyond as your main like management system, your main content system, definitely check out those two new books. This was honestly, Ben, I know we've been talking about third parties. This was a big get as far as I'm concerned. Like MCDM is one of the top tier, along with Kobold Press in a lot of ways. And Ghostfire Gaming, also another really big name. So they really seem to be going after the big third party publishers to get them on D&D Beyond. And I think that's a super cool thing. And I really hope that gives, I really hope that gives the ability to see some of the more, like, not just adventure or monster type books, but classes. Like MCDM in particular has like three or four like full on classes that are super cool, a ton of fun to play. They've got the Illrigger, which is like the anti-paladin, mm-hmm. the Beastheart, which is a really like fully well done. You know how you have your like Beastmaster Ranger. This is the real version of that, like the full class, fully synergistic version of that. And then they also have the Talent, which is their psionic class.
Yeah, that's,
I'd love to see those in D&D Beyond.
Huge addition. It's not just something that's added as a subclass. I mean, and to be all on it, or to be completely honest, you know, I've thought that a Beastmaster Ranger is, I mean, we all know it's bad, but having it as its own class and having that be the actual focus and stuff is such a great addition that I am glad that MCDM has their foot in the door, and hopefully we can get some of those really awesome new things. I mean, we got the Blood Hunter from Critical Role, so why not add some more classes this way?
Agreed. I hope we see that in addition to just, while I'm checking off the wish list, them expanding and revamping and adding better UI to their homebrew system on D&D Beyond, because that's by far one of the most useful things on that site, in my opinion. Getting third-party classes in there as well would be a huge boon.
Definitely. Sure.
So moving on to our first party type news, we had a huge reveal for the brand new 2024 Player's Handbook, Dungeon Master Guide, Monster Manual, but specifically the Player's Handbook. The first of which being, it's going to start being up for pre-order on June 18th for $50. Each of the three new books is coming in at 384 pages a piece, which is pretty beefy. And one of the even bigger things is just from the, and we'll have the article in the show notes on dndiscussions.com, obviously, but the art budget seems to be massively increased for these. Like they show off some of the new art from the Player's Handbook. They show off the cover, which is gorgeous. They have said that all the classes, all the main classes, will get their own key art. And then every single one of the 48 subclasses will also have key art to help kind of depict the fantasy and the look to kind of get people's brains going.
Yeah. I mean, everything that they have in the article is just absolutely gorgeous. You know, it blows my mind, but the amount of detail and just like love that went into some of these pieces of art, because I mean, that's exactly what they are, pieces of art. It is just amazing. I mean, even just seeing the iterations of the cover that are, you know, linked on the article and stuff is just neat to see the evolution of it moving into something that they really want to use and stuff. And it just gets me so much more excited for all of the art for all of these books, because I mean, yeah, DM's book, who knows what kind of art we're going to have there, but with the Player's Handbook having just the different classes, like really showing that hit of fantasy, because I mean, to be honest, okay, so back when I played World of Warcraft, the reason that I chose a mage is because of some of the artwork of, I think it was like the tier 5 armor or something like that, because it looked really cool to me. The idea of being able to go through the Player's Handbook, or at least handing it to someone new who hasn't had a chance to really play or understand, you know, the characters and classes and stuff, being able to kind of go through and see examples of, you know, just in universe cool things that they can be doing or how they're designed and things like that, can really just inspire someone to choose either a class that they've never done before, or just, you know, being able to choose the one that they, you know, really feel calls for them based on whatever artwork is in play. So I'm just super excited for that. Plus, on top of that, new artwork for all the monsters is just mind-blowingly cool. I mean, some of the dragon examples that they have in here, just in, again, kind of like the reiterations and or the iterations of it as it's, you know, coming to fruition and stuff, is just neat. You know, you get a sense of scale, you get the different designs of, you know, how the facial features work and the horns are going and stuff. And I mean, just overall gorgeous stuff. Absolutely gorgeous.
Yeah. And I mean, that specifically, they said there is going to be new art for all five chromatic and metallic dragons.
Mm-hmm.
And they are going to be different looking than what you've seen in the past, which are all kind of based on the same body type, you know, to an extent, with more different heads and maybe different tails.
Yeah.
For the most part.
If you look at just the difference between the red and the bronze dragon in this article, you'll see exactly what they're talking about. We're talking, you know, definitely different body shape, different tail shape, but even more so, the wings are different, the way that the faces are kind of arranged and everything. It's just really cool. And so much design work and effort has gone into this, as well as just the beautiful just paint jobs that they have for these examples.
As you well know, Ben, I'm a huge fan of dragons. So what? I'm very excited to see, like, kind of the revamps and the making them more their own type thing. So that it's, you don't have to, like, which head is that? Like, is that the instantly recognizable, the, like, more serpentine look of the gold dragon with the wings, the more aquatic look of the bronze, just the thick, heavy build, the spikes, the red, the coloring of the red dragon. So I'm very excited to see what those look like. But overall, this little preview thing was phenomenal, and I can't wait to see what all art is actually in the book.
Yeah, just really one more thing about the dragons too. Just looking at these pictures, the musculature that they have for, like, the wings, you know, mixed in with the bodies and stuff, looks so good. Like, it's not just how can dragons fly? Their wings are dinky, or, you know, the appendages that hold them are just so small or something like that. Like, they've really kind of got it beefed out, and it fits and it looks so good. So I'm just so excited to see all these.
Yeah. And just to kind of give you an idea. So this is all from Game Informer magazine, right? This was kind of the preview from that. If you want to see the whole thing, you'll have to go and get all the details. You'll have to go to the game and grab a copy, you know, or digital or physical or otherwise, of Game Informer. But there was a nice little TLDR for the Game Informer thread that I just wanted to hit some of the highlights for, right? As they talk about this new 2024 edition. Obviously, they're preparing that the revision is fully compatible with what exists now. That's obviously been said for quite a while. This is the first time that the lead designers of the new edition, and it's funny that they say new edition. It's very much 5.5 in a lot of ways. It really is. The lead designers of the new edition were the lead designers of the previous one too, which is very interesting to me, because I feel like, obviously there's pros and cons to that, right? But from a pro perspective, they've had 10 years to really look and see what went well and what didn't.
Mm-hmm, exactly.
And then they can make changes based on that.
Yeah. And on top of that too, when you look at it, if you had the original version and stuff and you really want to reiterate on it, you know, where you kind of, you know, didn't exactly put your best efforts in, where you had to focus your time more and everything. So,
yeah,
you know,
what you lacked in time and budget the first time. Yeah. Like, I mean, they've said multiple times the DMG was kind of an afterthought.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
5e originally, because they just didn't have the people and they didn't have the time.
Yeah. So, like, this is the good version of George Lucasing the original Star Wars trilogy. They're going back and, you know, updating it for the better.
Yeah, I mean, they even mentioned value proposition of this. Mm-hmm. Better organized, new content, reworks of classes and backgrounds, addition of bastions, which I'm actually very excited for, especially for my like urban campaign. Yes. Weapon masteries, which I'm sure many martial classes are very excited for, and more. The new intent is to help players contextualize and understand the content they're reading. And this is where we taught the player's handbook includes 12 pictures, one of each class, and 48 pictures of each subclass, one for each subclass, hoping to inspire players to pick the one that inspires them.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. And, you know, on top of that, too, they're not exactly jumping right into character creation like they did before. They have, you know, really an opening chapter about playing, which I think is actually really important, because how do you know what you want to choose and what you want to play if you don't really know exactly what you're getting into? I mean, as a DM,
or if you're just bombarded by character choices before you know how to play.
Exactly. Like as a DM, yeah, we hold their hand through everything. But at the same time, if you don't have a game yet, but you want to, you know, join, and your only introduction is just, hey, here's the player's handbook. I'm going to be a player. This is what I need to know. Learning about what to kind of expect or how the game runs and everything is really important when it comes to creating what you want to be in that game.
Yeah. They said the bulk of the player's handbook does focus on character creation, and it contains a rules glossary, which many people will be very happy about. 75 feats, 16 backgrounds, species, is going to be the new term as well. Asimar, Goliaths, and Orcs are present as species in the base book now. Equipment now contains weapons with weapon masteries, which is very excited. Expanded tool list. And this is a big one. It seems like it's a little detail, but
yeah.
More details on crafting things like potions and scrolls.
Yes.
And I really like this because from what I hear, Pathfinder actually has a decently like robust crafting system, and while we don't necessarily need that, it is sometimes annoyingly vague about how players make things. So more detail on that, even at a base level, is incredibly welcome, in my opinion.
Yeah, I agree with you on that. I mean, I have a player who wants to get into alchemy and, you know, make poisons and potions and stuff. And there's really not a whole lot that is spoken about that. So having a bit of, you know, guidance in there is definitely a plus.
Yep. Then they talked a little bit about the Dungeon Master's Guide. So they said the goal for it was to make it an indispensable resource in and out of play. The new DMG will show, not tell, which again, I think is incredibly helpful, especially for new DMs, because they said the will contain half a page first draft adventure design for DMs to springboard off of. The book is a toolbox of ideas and not only has magic items in it, but sample maps and guidelines on encounter design, which is a big deal because getting started as a DM, this is hard stuff. Like this is not easy stuff. It also comes with the Bastion system, which they did have an Unearthed Arcana, which is an optional set of rules in the Dungeon Master's Guide to give the players something at home they care about. Full lore glossary explaining key players across D&D's history. That's pretty cool.
Mm-hmm.
And then, interestingly, they are going with, instead of the Forgotten Realms, which a lot of their content has been based in over the last 10 years, this is going to be detailing the world of Greyhawk, which is the original game world created by Gary Gygax as a template for DMs to utilize.
That is going to be a lot of fun. I am excited about all that stuff. I mean, gosh, just adding to helping out DMs, helping out players, everything. Like, I am super excited about this update, which is what it is. Yes. It's an update.
It's an update. It's an update. It's the 5.5.
Yeah,
right?
Exactly. And I mean, I know that, But before we got a lot of information on it and everything, you and I, we were a little skeptical because Five was going so well, but I mean, this write-up has really, it's pointed out a lot of the things that are coming that, you know, have been kind of hinted at and everything, but it's really showing us a fantastic new view of the DMG, because I mean, as we said, like what, 5 minutes ago, it was made in as an afterthought originally. So
yeah,
this is just and amazing.
To be fair, like the current DMG has a lot of really good stuff in it. It really mm-hmm. does. The problem is finding it.
Yes. Yeah. Organization like, is not its strong
point. It is very poorly organized because there is a lot of really cool stuff, but yeah, it is. So having a DMG that is just organized well is going to be just a huge boon.
Mm-hmm.
Huge boon. And then finally, they wrap it up talking a little bit about the Monster Manual, the new Monster Manual that's going to be coming out in February of next year. It said they say it's their biggest ever, 500 monsters, including 75 brand new ones.
Oh.
This is a big, big old book. I'm very interested to see the design and mechanical changes.
Mm-hmm.
For this, I'm wondering if we see something that does look a little more like a Flea Mortals type thing, where the stuff has more interesting things than, you know, Bite Claw, and has that more not only fun to play against, but fun to run mm-hmm. as well, right? Because the DM is also a player in a lot of ways, and you want to have fun stuff to be able to do with them. So that's cool. They said every single stat block has been changed. Monsters have the same CR as in the original 2014 book for backwards compatibility. Monsters have expanded families to help the building out of ecosystems. They added a high CR vampire. This is really cool.
Yeah.
Called the Nightbringer, so that vampires can be used in higher level campaigns, allowing for clearer narratives. And then additionally, they're also adding epic Titan level monsters that are on par with the Tarrasque.
That's so cool.
And they mention an example, the Blob of Annihilation, a gelatinous cube that can eat an entire town. So that's super fun. And I like this because it makes me feel like that in this second half of 5e, we are going to potentially see a little more emphasis on tier 3-4.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Like they seem to really, I mean, we saw that with Vecna, which just came out, right? Eva Ruin. And now they're saying we're adding a lot of these Titan level or higher CR type monsters to the Monster Manual. What better things to use them for than higher level adventures that may, we don't know, but they may be coming. And it feels like that going into the second decade of fifth edition, it just makes a lot of sense to start putting at least some of your focus on those tier 3, tier 4 levels, because you put so much focus on tier 1, tier 2 in the first 10 years.
Mm-hmm, exactly. And I mean, look, if you're looking at it this way, in our fifth edition, like life campaign, you know, we're getting into that tier 3, tier 4. So it totally makes sense that they're giving us more of that. But I like the idea of Titan level monsters because, I mean, who doesn't want to have a kaiju attack the town in their D&D game and try to figure out how to actually, you know, take it down and get rid of it, especially when you're at such a high level that, you know, you're, you know, typical roadside bandits are just nothing at that point. You know, when you're higher level, you're taking down, you know, like archangels and demons and gods and stuff. And having more terrestrial like monster type stuff is really cool. Plus, on top of that, I can see a Blob of Annihilation just sprouting out of anywhere where someone just makes a mistake with some sort of alchemy that they're trying to do. So you have a perfect hook right there for, oh, the town is going to get absorbed.
I'm excited. I think this is going to be a really big deal. I think in a lot of ways, it'll be a really big deal. And then I guess we'll see over time, right? as they come out with their more setting books and more adventures, if we see that higher level play. Vecna seemed to have been pretty well reviewed. I'm excited to see people play through that. I want to play through it or run it at some point, honestly. I think that'd be super fun. So we'll just see how it goes.
Yeah, I and then had a finally look through Vecna yet, but
here's the thing. Apparently there is like a warning at the beginning of the book that says, if you're not a DM, don't read this. If you're not going to DM this, don't read this.
Oh, that's great. That's absolutely great.
Yeah. Yeah. So, that'll be interesting. I'll have to decide on that with a group at some point. And then finally for the kind of wrap up of the article, they also said there is a large addition of NPCs of given themes, bandits, pirates, mages, etc., that can be dropped in with no prep work and have a large spread of power levels. These to me are some of the most important and useful stat blocks for my games. Mm-hmm. When I need just the quick drop in of an NPC or of a group that I want to do, instead of having to like make it up myself, being able to pull those like wide variety of CR, just like regular dudes.
Oh yeah.
Or just the generic guys is so helpful for being able to quickly get something going.
Yep. I'll be talking about my experience about that a little bit later too.
Excellent. Excellent. But yeah, so if you, that's kind of the like high level details, but if you want to check it out, obviously you can grab the Game Informer issue and read the entirety of the article yourself and go and see all the art, etc.
Yep, exactly.
All right, moving on to our main topic of the night. We are going to talk a little bit about dealing with insight checks. And these are really interesting because from a guidance standpoint, insight is essentially one person reading the emotional or physical state of another.
Mm-hmm.
Right. This is not mind reading, although it has been treated that way at times. An insight check is not a mind read. It is not necessarily a full confirmation of exactly the thing you're wanting to confirm. Right. It's like, is this person the killer? Right.
Insight check.
Yeah. An insight check may lead you to have a bit more information or potentially become more sure of something, but it's not a mind reading of the person going, yeah, I did it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. That would
They're sweating a little more, or maybe, you know, they're fidgeting or nervous or something like that. And could it be because of that particular thing, or could it be because of something else? Context for insight checks matters a lot.
Mm-hmm.
And as a DM, make sure you take the context of what is being asked and what the situation is when a person does an insight check. Because if, let's say in that situation, they're not actually being asked point blank if they killed somebody. Maybe they're talking about something else, but your character is suspicious.
Yeah,
that exactly. Might not be exactly what you want. Or you might not, the vibes you get might not deal particularly or exactly with what your question is.
Yeah.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Did you ever play... what was it? It was a generation or two of on game systems, LA Noir, where
yes.
Yeah, they had like mm-hmm. the facial features of the characters, they were mapped in really well. And as you're going through and like interrogating, you have to kind of read the ticks and like where their eyes are going and things like that to try to figure out like if they're lying or not. And the way that I look at Inside, it's kind of like, you know, you're reading a person based, like Ryan said, off of their, you know, like their mannerisms or what they're portraying outwardly and everything like that. And based on, you know, how high you roll, you can very easily give someone the impression that, oh yeah, they're hiding something. It may not be this, but like their eyes keep darting to the floor in a certain section, you know, like that might be where they hid their gold. If you're, you know, trying to find something that was stolen, or, you know, the body's down there, or maybe they're, you know, constantly like, you know, kind of, playing with their hands and moving it around. Like maybe it's the guilt that, you know, their hands were bloody 5 minutes ago and they're washed, or they're trying to cover something up or something. You're able to give, I guess the best way to put it is, you're able to give like Sherlock Holmes, like viewpoints of different things about them, of what's going on, without fully saying, oh yeah, you know, he's thinking, oh no, I'm being questioned. What's going on here? Oh no, I need to run to this over there or something like that. You can definitely give them, okay, he's acting very nervous as you're pressing in with these questions. His eyes keep darting over to the open door or something along those lines to kind of paint the picture of what's going on without completely just throwing out what is going on.
Yeah, I completely agree with you. And I think insight checks are one of those interesting things because it's very... like there's certain things I don't allow people to just keep rolling checks on.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Like there's certain things that once a character does it, they can't just keep doing it.
Yeah.
But with insight checks, it's a little different because I feel like, and this is just from a DM perspective, it feels like each player character, not to mention the player themselves, but each player character brings their own biases and their own interests and their own strengths and weaknesses to the table when they're doing an insight check. So that I like to try and tailor them to the character as much as I can. Mm-hmm. So say... like a character who is suspicious of authority, right, is rolling an insight check against a noble. Maybe they roll low, or maybe they roll middling. What I can do as a DM is kind of play into what I know of that character to potentially reinforce things they may already think, or potentially play to a certain emotion. So if someone had a character who had a problem with authority and they're talking to an authority figure and they do an insight check and they get low or they get middling, you might go, this, you know, this person is in power over this community. A lot of times people with power misuse that power, right? And so what I'm doing there is not necessarily revealing what is happening with that person specifically.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not even giving anything away for that particular person. I'm generalizing, but for that specific character that then reinforces something that they're already thinking about or that they've already have gone to show. And so you can play with those generalities if you need to, especially on lower roles where maybe a low or a middling type role doesn't even get you anything specific about that person, but just the generality around that as well.
Yeah. It's like you've been around the block. You understand that power corrupts. Obviously, that's going on here, too. Nothing's pointing you that way, but there you go. Something along those lines. But no, that's a little too on the nose, honestly. But I mean, I like the idea of really kind of digging into insights as, again, just reading the situation, reading the people, reading what's going on. And the trickiest part on that is how much you do want to actually put in there. Because as Ryan said, with like a lower role, having more of a generalization, especially to, you know, playing to the characters and stuff, it's great. But where do you kind of figure, okay, well, let's give a little bit more information. Let's give a little bit more before you just completely give up the whole thing of, oh yeah, no, he's lying. You can totally tell and blah, 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 blah. And that I think is where, you know, especially beginner DMs kind of have that challenge because they do just want to say, oh yeah, no, he's totally lying about this. What he really intends to do is this or something along those lines. And like Ryan pointed out, it's not mind reading. So tailoring what you get with the information that you have is one of those, you know, improv muscles that you have to learn to kind of flex as you experience and grow in your DMing. Because again, you can give them the whole cake and let them eat it and everything, but individual slices here and there, especially as the story is kind of progressing, works incredibly well and helps build the narrative of what's going on, as opposed to just, you know, revealing the it was old man to Williger's the entire time or something.
Oh gosh, I love it. Scooby-Doo. I think that was it's a great mention to talk about. It's a muscle you have to flex.
Mm-hmm.
It's an improv muscle you have to flex, because I think being able to describe a good insight check just takes a lot of practice.
Yeah.
And takes time, and tailoring for that specific situation. Like I said, context is everything. And it, as is in many things, context is everything.
Mm-hmm.
That's though a player insight checking an NPC.
Mm-hmm.
What happens when a player insight checks another player?
Yeah.
Some games don't allow this at all. I think there are both good ways to handle this and very poor ways to handle this. And I think just starting out, poorest way you can handle a player to player insight check is taking away agency from the player.
Yes.
I think that is the absolute worst thing you can do in that type of a situation. So like, let's say a player does something fishy or a player does something that is unexpected, right? And another player goes insight check on Bob. I think as a DM, I would first go, okay, please explain to me the reason you are insight checking their character. I need your character, not the player.
Mm-hmm.
I need your character's reason to insight check Bob, right? And then if they give me a good explanation, I would say, okay, cool. If Bob, if you're trying to hide something, or you would, you know, if you're trying to hide something or something's off, feel free to roll deception, right? Versus the insight check. And then if the player who is trying to do the deceiving, or maybe they're even not, maybe it's something they just go, no, I'm not trying to deceive anybody. But if they are, they can roll it. If their deception beats it, then it's a very easy, something might be off, but they're kind of a hard read right now, yeah. Or they've done this before, or they look like that a lot, right?
Or you trust your friend.
Yeah, you trust your friend. But if the player rolling the insight check beats it, what I would then do is I would turn to the player and go, what do they see in you? Because I, as a DM, do not want to take agency away from my player.
Mm-hmm.
So I want them to divulge based on that role that they were beat by, what the other player sees from them physically and emotionally.
Yeah. What I do in situations like that is, and I will completely say it, I took a lot of it from Matt Mercer. I think he has a really good way of doing this, and it's not even a, just like a single role or anything like that, but it does keep a lot of the agency with the player as well. And that's, you know, if someone does have an insight check against another member of the party, you do have both people roll, but the person who is having the check upon them, they roll either persuasion or deception, and they don't say which one it is. So essentially what happens is, you know, they roll, and if, it beats, say, the deception roll, then they'll say, again, you give it to the player to kind of describe what they see, what they know, or how much they really want to give away, you know, if they were beaten. However, if the player who's being checked wins it, they go with however they want to do it. If they are deceiving them, then of course they're going to just say what's going on, or what's supposed to be going on, or what they're trying to deceive about. Whereas if they're, you know, being completely honest and stuff, they still had that role in there with the persuasion. They can just be like, yeah, no, this is exactly what's going on. You know, either way you do it, the player gets to be able to give that response in some form. And I think, like you said, that's the most important thing that can come out of all of this. But I do like the idea that you don't know which way they're rolling based on what's going on. And to me, I love having like that little bit of mystery, because as a character, yeah, you trust Bob. You know that he's on the level. Everything's good. But as a player, maybe Bob didn't do something horribly wrong or something like that, that, you know, that's between him and the DM. Versus, you know, if it's completely said out loud at the table, then it just makes it really fun for everybody, because you think everything's fine when you know that he did something bad or whatever, which, you know, can add a little bit more fun to it. Like on Plus Five, as Falwyn, I did something really bad and basically got Oral the Frost Maiden's eyes on us as we were exploring a certain area because of something I did. And I totally lied about it and says like, oh no, I accidentally did this thing because I was invisible and couldn't see. And a player insight checked me and I rolled against it and won the roll. And I'm all like, yeah, it was horrible. I get all thumbs when I can't see myself because I'm invisible and stuff. And she's like, oh, okay, well, that makes sense. But at the same time, she's like, ah. So we had fun with that because of that. But going forward, I was able to call back on that and be like, oh man, it sucks when accidents happen and, you know, things like that, and just kind of play around with the situation because they were in on the entire picture. But we've had a situation as well where something's going on with him in the current game. No one else knows what's going on. I'm being kind of sneaky about stuff. And yeah, an insight check happened and I won it. Everything's fine. And that could be because I lied about something. It could be because my own personal belief is that everything's fine. You know, it could be a multitude of things that's going on. But because of the check, it kind of kept that secret in play without everybody knowing what's going on.
Yeah, I really do kind of like the deception or persuasion role, like secret, right? Like which is which. I think that's kind of a really fun idea mm-hmm. for that, because most of the time people have their secrets.
Yep.
Like many times there's going to be backstory stuff or things that have happened in game that the DM took you aside or talked to you afterwards or something, and things happen that the other players don't know about. I mean, I'm seeing that constantly in the game I'm running, where mm-hmm. all these characters have lives, they have all this stuff going on, and sometimes little hints or little things will pop up and players will be like, what, like where'd that come from, like what is that type thing. So I think it's very good for players to be able to have their secrets, and again that's why I think from a DM perspective, I never want to take away player agency, because I don't want to be the one to crack open a big reveal that is theirs.
Yeah.
To have.
Exactly.
Or to do.
Yeah, no, and that's great. It, advocating for players, especially in times like that when it's very character driven, is such a blessing as a player to be able to go through and play it and reveal that, because, you know, they've spent a lot of time, especially in your game where they have lives and everything, spend a lot of time creating backstories and everything about the past and stuff. So being able to finally get to the point where it's like, okay, well, the entire world's going to fall around me, I should probably tell my secret, or getting to the point where they feel comfortable enough as their character to trust people enough to kind of bring them into the fold. Like, both of those are really important things for the character to be able to portray at the table.
Yeah, I completely agree. And so it's one of those things. Make sure that if you do feel like your agency is being taken away from you, make sure to speak up. Mm-hmm. Make sure to talk about it. And this is also, just from a DM perspective, a level of trust to develop with your players, right? Like, if X player loses the role, I trust that player enough to give a good accounting for a lost insight check, but not necessarily having to reveal everything, because, again, we're not reading minds.
Exactly.
It's the insight checks are for a very specific moment in time.
Yeah. It, you know what? By talking to you today, if I were to do an insight check into something, I could tell that it's been a long day and you're tired, but you're happy to be here. Now, next time we get together to run a session or to record a show, I'll be able to do another insight check to be like, oh, you know what? He is super peppy. He must have had a really great day today. Great. We're going to do this and be so full of energy and happy and awesome. And that's when, you know, having multiple ones over the course of different times can reveal different things and how it can actually play out.
Yeah. But at the same time, just to even use that example, let's say I look tired or I'm draggy or something like that. The reason for that might not be the same on week one and again on week five.
Exactly.
There could be a completely different reason, but the emotional state is the same.
Mm-hmm.
So it's really something interesting to think about as well.
Yeah. And at that point, I'd have to be the good friend to be like, hey, what's up, buddy? As opposed to just being like, oh, this is great. He lost another $20 gambling this week. I don't know. I had to think of something really weird that I'm pretty sure you don't do. So
I have never lost $20 gambling. That'd be a new experience for me. But yeah, so I think there's a lot of nuance. I think there's a lot more nuance to insight than what is really talked about or what is really let on.
Mm-hmm.
So it really comes down to, what is your relationship with your players at the table? What is the trust level with your players at the table?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And developing that enough to trust your players and give them the agency to really play their story out.
Yeah.
We'd love to hear from you. Do you have stories of really cool insight checks that worked well, or ones that went horribly awry? We'd love to hear from you in our Discord or at dndiscussions@gmail.com. We always love when people write in or pop in with their stories about their experiences with things we talk about on the show.
Exactly. And we'll have all that info again at the end of the episode.
Which, speaking of, we are almost there, but first things first, Ben, I know you have a little community shout out as well as a little report on your last D&D session, because sadly for me, I was not able to meet since the last time I recorded, because we took an extra week off just because schedules and summer and holiday weekend and all that stuff. We're going to be meeting again at the end of this week. So I'm super pumped for that. There's a lot going on that I'm excited to talk about. But Ben, why don't you go ahead and tell us about the community content and how that plays into your how you've been playing D&D.
You bet. So I'm not entirely sure if you are fully familiar with like the Steamforge like Animal Adventures games. I know that some people out there do, some people don't. But the thing that's great about them is the fact that if you ever want to play D&D but be a dog, you can. If you want to play D&D and be a cat, you can. So basically
they even have their own little miniature line.
Yes, they do.
And they're so cute.
Yeah. So it's Animal Adventures. And essentially it is that you're just, you know, animals going through and adventuring and stuff. So there's the cats and catacombs, there's the dungeons and doggies, and they've had, you know, different, volumes of figures and stuff that have come out in all these and stuff. And they're absolutely adorable. And because of that, I'm like, okay, this is great. I've bought, some of the miniatures and stuff before just to have, you know, different things I can use in my game because, you know, back when I wasn't doing a virtual tabletop, I had miniatures all the time. And, you know, I made a German Shepherd shopkeeper. I should have a figurine that's a German Shepherd. And lo and behold, they have one there. So
obviously,
anyways, did that. So one of the great things is that on Steamforged, you know, they're the ones who create this and do everything. And routinely they'll go ahead and do Kickstarters. So gosh, probably 2 years ago, maybe 3 years ago, I don't know, something like that, they did Animal Adventures, The Faraway Sea, which is basically, you know, island hopping and stuff. And it was a brand new story or source book that they created with a bunch of new characters, you know, even more like really awesome animals, like, you know, red pandas, and which I absolutely love. There's like goats. There's a whole bunch of different things. And I went ahead and kickstarted it at like one of the highest levels. So I got like all the figures. I got the source book. I got the dice. I got the DM screen. I got like everything. Cause I'm like, this is great. This is awesome. And I love it. It's a lot of fun. There's a lot of different, like, it's the Faraway Sea. So there's a bunch of different, like, you know, islands that you can kind of go to that they have all spelled out and figured out. There's a pirate ship that's crewed by raccoons. I mean, there's a whole bunch of different fun things in there. So I really recommend that you check that out. It's on steamforge.com. I will have a link in the show for this specific, the Faraway Sea. And the reason I'm bringing that up is because my characters are now on a voyage in the sea. So I thought, what better way to you know, kind of populate some of this adventure than by kind of digging through the source book and seeing some of the stuff that I can find. And boy, howdy, is there some really great stuff in here that I absolutely love. Okay. So in my adventure, like I said, they went ahead and they took a side hook and they're heading back to their home or two of the half elves' home country of origin. So it's going to be like a 2 week boat trip going up the coast and everything. So I'm like, great. We have one stop along the way. Then you're going to get to your home country. We're going to have fun with that. It's going to be great. But I'm like, I need to populate the sea now because we've never thought about going out there. So I'm like, great. Made some encounters, made some characters. And when you're talking about like NPCs that you just want to bring in and populate, they don't have a sailor in the current monster manual or dungeon guide or anything like that. So I'm like, okay, let's make sailors. So had to create a sailor class so that the ship they're sailing on has stat blocks for the crew, which I might've gone a little overboard. I have a crew of 14 on like a galleon type boat. So I'm like, okay, we're doing this.
Oh, that's a lot of characters.
Named everybody. Everybody has a little bit, you know, something about them and stuff. I'm like, okay, but I have three that are kind of the main, which is the captain, which is a dwarf who, because I wanted to be a lazy DM, when they're like, we should go sailing up to Erland, I'm like, that's great. There's a dwarf sitting at the table next to you that says, really? I have a ship. So that's just how they figured that out, how they're going to go up there. Cause I'm like, we're going to get through this. We're going to go and have some fun just right away. We're not going to worry about this. So made the captain, made the first mate, which is a Tempest cleric, because those are really good to have on ships. and then also a navigator as well, who I pulled directly from the Faraway Sea because it's an otter. So why not have an awakened otter as, you know, the navigator on a ship, which is awesome.
I mean, the absolutely precedent has been set.
Exactly. We've got a German Shepherd shopkeeper. Might as well have an otter navigator. It works. So, anyways, they made it down to Seaside, which is the small, you know, port town that's just south of the capital city, where all the imports and exports kind of go through there and everything. They got on the ship. They, you know, started sailing away. They noticed on a couple of the crates that were loaded a symbol of a bird of prey, which kind of harkens back to a session that we had way near the beginning of the campaign. So 80 some odd sessions ago. So who knows? Something like that might play into it when they dock at a place called Sunrise. But anyways, so, you know, they introduced the whole crew to them, which took a long time because, again, there's 14 people. they decided that they only needed to rent one room on this ship because our bard has magnificent mansions. So she just casts the mansion and then they just stay in the mansion inside the room on the deck or on the ship, which I'm like, that works. Cause I had a tiny little debate where I'm like, okay, so if they cast it, is the door going to stay in place when the ship goes away? But I'm like, no, that'd be a jerk thing to do. So I'm not going to do that. So when you cast it, it's on that part of the ship. It's there. So they constantly have their magic mansion inside on the ship to kind of go in and, you know, use and everything. So they start their sailing. First day, had them roll for it. Smooth sailing. Everything's great. Nice and sunny. They had a good wind. Everything was great. Second day, whole bunch of seagulls are up and, you know, flying around a certain area up ahead. So they slow the ship down, kind of, you know, try to get to stop next to this shipwreck that has like a big piece of the bow of a ship that's just kind of floating there. And there are these bodies on it, a couple in the water. So they're like, okay, well, we're going to see if there's any survivors because, you know, what happened here? And it was deemed that pirates probably got them because it looks like there's spots for, you know, cannonballs that got shot through, as well as, you know, a little bit of charring and stuff. So, you know, like maybe the powder keg blew up or something along those lines. So you ended up getting to the bow of the ship. Turns out the bodies that are on there are zombies. They've all got like a giant chunk bitten out of them. And oh my gosh, it's crazy. Zombies on the ship. Okay. So the captain yells out, come back to the ship. Cause you know, I figure captain just wants to sail away. Zombies aren't going to do anything to a ship. It's fine. But there's, you know, a crew member or two over there already. So they need to get back. So as combat's starting to progress, the zombies are starting to attack, as well as the ones in the water are going towards the boat and they're going to climb up onto the deck. So it's like, okay, we might get not really overrun cause there weren't a ton, but you know, there's enough where it's like, okay, we need to be careful here. And then a couple turns in, all of a sudden, an undead zombie shark pops up and goes for an attack. And I pulled that directly from the Faraway Sea because holy crap, it's cool. Now they call it a white shark, like, you know, W-I-G-H-T. I'm like, that's great. I need to call it a great white shark, though. So I just changed the name slightly. So one of the great things about this shark is that because it's a zombie shark, you know, and it's going through, it's got a bite attack, but it also has a life drain attack where, you know, if it bites and does the life drain and it brings the target down to zero, it, you know, if they fully die, they turn into a zombie. So that's where these zombies came from. Not only was there one, there were two more. So they're circling, doing this, and the whole combat is them, you know, trying to stay away, trying not to get attacked by zombies, taking everything out. And I gotta say that over and over again, I've said how much I love my players, how great they are. They were able to basically incapacitate two of the zombie sharks for, one was for pretty much the entire combat. The other was for, you know, one or two turns. And I was just so impressed because I don't know if you know about an actual scientific thing that happens with sharks where if you like kind of rub them on their nose and you can like kind of flip them over and they get hypnotized. So our rogue did a mage hand really? With that. And
no.
So I'm kind of sitting here. I'm like, okay, is it only going to happen if they're alive? It's undead. But I'm like, but refluxes still happen when you're dead. So I'm like, okay, let's do this. This is a crazy way to, you know, kind of incapacitate a shark. So I had it just kind of incapacitated for one round. And I'm just like, that was absolutely amazing. Then the other one was taken out for pretty much the entire combat because of psychic glance. Cause holy crap, that's an amazing spell. They need to do an intelligence saving throw for it. And these sharks had a one for intelligence. So the only way they were going to beat that is if I rolled a 20. So I rolled every time, never got a 20. So one shark was just there, just taking damage, getting hit with his lance. The other one, one turn, just flipped over. And then the third one was able to kind of get in, get some attacks and stuff. And I mean, it was a really fun combat. I had a blast with it. I've learned that I'm not going to include the crew into combat anymore because I didn't even have the whole crew, just the crew that was on the top deck, as opposed to the ones in the guns and then the hold and stuff. And it took forever. So I'm like, okay, we're not doing that anymore, but we had fun. They took care of the sharks. One of the crew members who had gone across was killed by one of the sharks. They brought him back, but he was like all sick and infected and stuff. Then they just did a lay on hands on him, cured the disease. And I mean, it worked out really well. I was super happy with the combat. Everybody had a good time with it. And I got to use zombie sharks in a combat, which was awesome. And I figure
that sounds super cool.
This is the first step on a journey or on, you know, on a new journey and everything. It's been a while. Went ahead and gave him a level at the end of the session. Everybody was happy with that. So now I've got a group of level 14 characters, and they're going to continue their journey north. And I'm looking forward to the next one.
Very cool. Very cool. I'm excited to hear how the journey progresses. And hopefully this is giving you the time you need to prep everything.
Yes,
for a completely unexpected side quest that has become the main quest for a while.
Yeah. Well, the good news is that I've already incorporated ideas on how this will help the main quest. So it's like, okay, you know, it's not going to be a complete side mission that does nothing to everything else. So I'm really happy about that. But on top of that, yeah, I'm like, okay, it's going to take 2 weeks to get there. So we're going to do this. And yeah, it'll get, I could easily get another 2-3 sessions out of this before we get to that mainland. So it'll be good. But yeah, it's awesome. Fun. And I've offline, I got to tell you about something else that's in the book that I found that I am totally going to use because it is amazing. But I can't talk about it right now again because sometimes my players listen. So
understand.
Hopefully they will roll this encounter.
Well, awesome. I'm excited to hear what you got next, as well as I'm excited to continue playing with my group a little later this week. But for now, that is going to wrap up our episode. We thank you so much, as always, for listening. We really appreciate your feedback. We really appreciate everyone who has jumped on the Discord to share stories. We had some really good discussion going in there just the other day. And so, Ben, I think this would be a great time to let everybody know where we can be reached.
Definitely. So if you have any questions, comments, or, you know, want to tell us about some of your fun insights that have happened, go ahead and send us an email. That address is going to be dndiscussions@gmail.com. For something a little bit more short form, you can find us on Blue Sky Social. The show is at DN Discussions. Ryan is at TBKZord, and I am at Ben Bumhofer. Now, if you don't use Blue Sky, join our Discord. Talk to us there. Believe it or not, we read it and we answer and we write and do a whole bunch of stuff and interactions and stuff. You can find a link to that on our website, which is dndiscussions.com. We have it under every single post since we've started using a Discord. So if you go back too far, won't see it. The most recent stuff will have that invite link on there. So make sure to join us and have some fun. Aside from that, like I said, dndiscussions.com is where you're going to find every single episode that we have ever done. Every single one. All 112 of them, which is pretty amazing to me, if you ask. And on top of that, too, another show I recommend, Plus Five to Hit, It's one that I play in. It's a live play of Rime of the Frostmaiden, which I believe we're starting to really get into the end game on this. So I'm excited to see what's going to happen afterwards, because our DM has talked about continuing on with homebrew stuff, but you know, we'll see what happens, or if he needs a break or whatever. But either way, I think it's coming to a close kind of soonish. So check it out. +5 to hit. This show, though, again, DM Discussions, thank you everybody very much for your support. It is fantastic to know that you're out there listening and enjoying what we're doing, as opposed to hating on what we're doing, which is, you know, always a possibility. But why would you listen, honestly? And Ryan, thank you. It is always so much fun to talk to you about one of my favorite subjects and favorite pastimes. So with that, everybody, thank you again. Roll high and be good to each other.
Take care, and we'll see you soon.